Welcome to Profiles. I'm Dick Bishop, and our guest is J. Terry Klapacz, who will retire officially on June 30th, 2009, as Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer of Indiana University. Terry's distinguished career with IU spans almost five decades as an undergraduate, graduate student, and administrator, a remarkable career and a remarkable record, and that's what we will be discussing with him in the next hour. Terry's service to the university and the state was celebrated recently, and he took away some impressive accolades, including the University Medal, awarded to only nine individuals previously, a Sagamore of the Wabash, his second, a scholarship program and a campus beautification fund in his name, and you even had a Terry Klapacz Day in Goshen. What's that all about? Is that right?
Well, Dick, as you know, Goshen, Indiana is my hometown, and some members of my family still live there, and I have many friends there that have been friends since grade school. And so it was quite a pleasure and a surprise that evening for one of my old friends to announce that the next day in Goshen would be in my honor. And I was honored by that, and it was a lot of fun, and it was sort of a fun moment as my friend John Turner made the announcement. It was quite an evening, as you know.
It was. Did you think when you came down here from Goshen in the early 60s as an undergraduate that you would spend your professional life here at dear old IU?
Never crossed my mind. Like many students, I arrived here not really knowing what I wanted to do with my career. During the summer before arriving, I had sort of thought that my real role in life would be to be a high school history teacher and to coach track. I ran track and cross country in high school, and I enjoyed it, and I always loved history. And I thought that's what I would do, and came to IU, and for lots of reasons, you know some of the stories, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. lots of reasons, ended up in the business school, and then went through the graduate school of business, finished an MBA, and during that time in graduate school, started working for the university, and I never really thought of the university as a possible career, but that's the way it worked out, and I've never looked back, and I've certainly never regretted for one moment our decision to stay here. Living in Bloomington is truly a blessing. It's just a great place to raise a family and be part of a community, and being part of Indiana University has just been everything I could have ever dreamed a career could be.
Well, tell us about your family. You, Phyllis, your lovely wife, and you have two sons?
We do. Phyllis and I married right after we graduated from IU. She taught English at Bloomington High School South for 30 years, and many of those years as department chair. And we have two boys, John Terry II, who is now living in Durham, North Carolina, and is a physician down at the Duke Medical Center, and married to a woman he met in residency there. So they're both physicians at Duke, and they have three children. And my son, Grant, who is an attorney in Indianapolis, married a Bloomington girl, a lovely woman named Marla Smith, and they have two children. And so we are blessed with five grandchildren, and we see them as often as possible.
I know you had several mentors during your undergraduate and graduate years here. Who were they, and why are they important to you?
Well, you know, the university was a little different then. You know, as you get older, you tend to make this statement more and more, and you catch yourself making the statement and sort of check up. But I'll start out answering your question by saying there was a time when you arrived on campus and you were given an advisor. And when I arrived on campus my first week as a freshman here and went going through orientation, I was handed an envelope, and in that envelope was a faculty advisor who was to review my proposed schedule and approve it. And I opened that envelope, and it said that I should go see someone named Chuck Bonzer, who is a professor over in the at the School of Business. So I walked over to what was then the Business Horizons office, which was at the corner of 10th and Fee Lane, which is where the business school is today, and found Professor Bonzer and got to know him. And he then was my academic advisor and counselor all the way through my undergraduate years. And as you know, Chuck Bonzer went on to
absolutely to
create one of the very finest schools of public and environmental affairs in the country. Mm-hmm. In my studies in the business school, I met Ed Williams, who to this day is my mentor. Everybody needs someone to tell you when you've done something right, and but also to tell you when you've done something that that needs improvement. And Ed was not bashful about either one of those jobs, and it just seemed like we hit it off. I had him as a professor, and also a professor again in the MBA program. It seems like I've just followed him around. He was also vice president for administration at one time, and even served a year as the interim director of athletics at IU. And so, but Ed was just a terrific guy. And as those relationships tend to do, it evolved from professor to friend to family member, and that's how it is today. We had lots of people in the early part of our stay here who helped. I knew several trustees that seemed to take an interest in the things that we also were interested in, meaning the campus and the quality of its design and architectural style. And I have to always give lots of credit to Dick Stoner, who was president of the Board of Trustees for a number of years, but he was executive vice president at Cummins Engine Company, and in that role had helped J. Irwin Miller think through the various issues that related to Columbus, Indiana, becoming the Athens of the Midwest. Dick was so generous in his help and guidance, and that much of what I know and about campus planning and architecture and the way things fit together really is a result of my working relationship with Dick Stoner. There are lots of other trustees mm-hmm. who played an important role too, but those were the primary people, Dick.
Well, before we start talking about your philosophy, Terry, and I think that's very important, you are the chief administrative officer of the university. Were. What does that entail? I mean, just tell the listeners what's an average day for Terry Klepacz like, and I think I know. And
when we talk about these things, we most often get involved in a discussion about architecture and planning and buildings, and that's because those are the most visible things. They're tangible, and you see them and experience them. But my role also includes areas that aren't quite so visible, but yet very important. For example, the HR function for the university, which involves everything from employment to labor relations to benefits, which include, of course, health care and retirement benefits. It's a huge area, and it's an area where expenses are growing rapidly. The cost of our health care plan, first of all, we cover almost 37,000 lives with health care at Indiana University. And so that takes a lot of time. Fortunately, we have an outstanding administrator over that area, an associate vice president named Dan Reeves, who just does an outstanding job. But there are other areas too, like purchasing and physical plant and real estate and environmental health and safety. The IU Police Department is part of the things we think about and worry about every day. And so mainly it's the non-academic functional or support units for the university. And in almost every case, it's not just for the Bloomington campus. It's those functions for all seven of the IU campuses.
Well, we'd like to talk to you at some length about your philosophical approach to your work. But we have a tradition on profiles where you bring along some music, and we know your love of music, Terry. So you've picked out some selections, and tell us about them.
Well, Dick, most of my taste in music would probably align very closely with your taste in music, because my favorite show was on Friday evening when you did the Afterglow show, which Phyllis and I seldom missed. Regardless of anything else we were doing, we would tune in on the way home from a movie or a dinner or a cocktail party, whatever. And because that's my kind of music. And so I think most of my selections that I brought today probably at one time or another were played on your radio show. I can't verify that, of course, but you and I have had a long-running play
with
the Four Freshmen.
With the Four Freshmen. From Columbus, of course.
From Columbus, and they have Indiana roots. But I love the Four Freshmen, and I have, I think, all of the albums and CDs that they ever produced by the Four Freshmen, and I listen to them a lot. And so It's a Blue World is one of my all-time favorites.
It's a blue world.
Four Freshmen, and it's a Blue World. It sounds as good today as it did when they recorded back in the mid-50s, doesn't it, Terry?
It sure did.
How much of an influence was Dr. Wells in your concept of what the campuses should look like architecturally and aesthetically, Terry? You, more than anyone over the last 40 years, have been responsible for the beautiful campuses of this university. And he was an influence, true?
Sure. I had the great fortune of knowing Chancellor Wells, spending some time with him, discussing the way campuses should evolve with him. And we all tend to credit Chancellor Wells with almost everything. And he deserves a world of credit for giving us this great university. The thing about Herman Wells, though, is that essentially when he left the presidency at the end of the 1961-62 school year, there really was only one major campus at Indiana University, and it was Bloomington, of course. There were extension programs out around the state, but they really hadn't developed, and Indianapolis was essentially a medical center, medical school, but not a lot more. The great influence of Wells was to think about the Bloomington campus the way he did during his presidency, and then we use that as an example. And so rather than say that Chancellor Wells specifically suggested this or that, we looked at what he had done and used that as a guide. And, of course, if we're going to give Chancellor Wells a lot of credit, we also need to give William Lowe Bryan a lot of credit, because Bryan, who was president, Dick, as you know, from 1902 to 1938, really was the president that created what we think of as the spine of this campus, which is the old Crescent area. The campus moved out to the Dunwood site in 1880 during the presidency of David Starr Jordan. But it was Bryan who hired the planning firm out of New York, the Frederick Law Olmsted firm, which, as you know, is famous for doing Central Park and a number of other great public spaces in this country. And they sort of laid out the way the IU Bloomington campus ought to be. And like most American universities, this campus is laid out in a way that follows the example that Jefferson used at the University of Virginia, which is to place buildings and structures around green areas. And Jefferson did that so well at the University of Virginia. And his great creation, the lawn and academical village, exists today and works as well today almost as it did when Jefferson first conceived that plan. Well, we did the same thing here. The crescent was laid out. It wasn't a rectangle like you would find at UVA. It wasn't a rectangle then. It became one. But the original crescent, which started, of course, with the buildings that you see, the student building and Maxwell and Owen and Wiley and on around to Kirkwood, Lindley, and Rawls, set the pattern for the way this campus would look. What Wells did was to continue that as the campus expanded to the east, and he made sure that there were green spaces generously mixed in with building spaces, and it worked. And of course, Wells was the great visionary that created the Showalter Plaza area and placed the library and the Lilly Library, placed the auditorium. And so he gave us that initial template for development. There were some things, though, that Wells did not do, and we talked about it occasionally. For example, Wells was not in favor of many flower areas and planting flowers because he thought they would be areas that required a lot of maintenance and cost and wouldn't be done right because budgets tend to go up and down. And when budgets are up, you take care of those areas. But when the budgets are down, you don't. And in a way, he's right about that. But we've been so fortunate to have the IU Foundation help us with creating endowments and gift funds. And that has taken the uncertainty out of our budgetary planning. And so there is, for example, a flower and bulb fund at the university, which allows us to plant thousands and thousands of bulbs every fall that come up in the spring. And so we've sort of evened out those peaks and valleys in the budgeting process. Like most things at the university, Wells was terribly influential. But he was always very practical in what he could do and get done. And when faced with tough choices, he pushed to, make the tough decision. We've been able to build on that. And so much of the campus as we know it today has been sort of developed after Wells' time here.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the campus beautification and a well-deserved accolade to you, Terry. The university's named the Campus Beautification Fund in your name, and we're very, very pleased about that.
Well, nothing could please me more than to have a continuing relationship with that particular part of university life. I so strongly believe that there is a direct correlation between aesthetic quality and academic quality. The the great universities of the world also are attractive universities. And I hear it, and I suspect you do too, Dick. Students come here and make decisions based on the way this campus feels. And that's the way it ought to be. In part, it was that way for me as well. When I first came to IU Bloomington, I thought this is what a university ought to look like. Most universities don't look like this anymore. But this one did back in the 1960s, and it's been my life's work to sustain that.
Many comments have been made about the new parking garage on Bloomington's southwest side, IU Bloomington's southwest side. It looks anything like a parking garage. Was that your idea?
Let me begin an answer to that question by pointing out the obvious, and that is there are only three or four key entry points to the IU Bloomington campus. Obviously, the bypass is one. Coming down 3rd Street is a second one, but a third and very prominent entry to the campus is right there at the corner of Indiana and Atwater, or Henderson and Atwater. And indeed, parking was in high demand in that area. So a parking garage was something we had to do, and the available land was right here at where people begin to see what Indiana University is all about. And so it seemed very obvious to me, and as we sat down and talked about the quality standard that should be used there, that it couldn't be a typical parking garage where you looked up and saw cars stacked on levels all the way up. It needed to reflect what IU Bloomington was all about. And so Bob Meadows, university architect, and I sat down and we said it really needs to carry the same architectural style as a major classroom building, and we didn't want to add a lot of cost, of course, but it couldn't just be something that like the Atwater garage, for example, on down the street. And so, working with the outside consultant, we continued to develop it, and it evolved. And we knew we had something very special when I saw the first designs, and then we just continued to make it better from there. But it had to be something unique, Dick. You couldn't say welcome to IU Bloomington, welcome to the campus, welcome to the university with a parking garage. It just wasn't the way isn't the way we do things at Indiana University. And so I think the final result was actually better than I ever thought it could be. I think it adds a lot to that neighborhood, and it certainly adds a lot to the campus.
I'd like to continue our discussion by moving on a little bit to IUPUI and your work there, which has certainly turned that campus completely around from where it was 40 years ago, for example. And also talk about your work with the regional campuses. But first, I think we ought to hear from Patsy Cline and that great recording of hers, one of your favorites and ours too, Patsy Cline's Crazy.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. Crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you'd love me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for some.
Well, that's Patsy Cline's recording of Crazy.
Production support for Profiles comes from Smithville, a locally owned business serving central and southern Indiana since 1922, with residential and business internet, voice, and security services. Smithville, local pride, global technology. Information at smithville.net. And the Funeral Chapel of Bloomington, providing funeral and crematory arrangement services for the chapel, church, and graveside. The Funeral Chapel, to honor and commemorate. 333-4400 or online at pdcfuneralchapel.com.
Terry, we were talking earlier about the campuses of the university, Bloomington, of course, the flagship. But the transformation of IUPUI has been stunning, and particularly over the last few decades. And we know you've had a lot to do with that, the transformation of that campus. And let's talk a little about your philosophy behind the growth of IUPUI, and also we can spread out a little bit to the other campuses of the university, particularly IU East, for example, and Southeast, that were literally created by you and your colleagues.
Well, IUPUI was a special challenge. Back in the early 1970s, it was clear to everyone that the Indianapolis campus was going to grow. First of all, the leadership in the city of Indianapolis continued to point out that while it was wonderful to have a great university in Bloomington and another great public university in West Lafayette, that every great city in the United States also had a university, and it was hard to argue with that, and it's right. No matter where you look, the first-rate cities in this country all have first-rate universities, and so either IU and Purdue were going to figure this out and do something to meet that need, or it was going to be met in a different way. And then there would just be one more university, public university, to divide up whatever state support Indiana could put together. Fortunately, and you have to give John Ryan a lot of credit for this, and Herman too, who worked behind the scenes. But you have to give John Ryan credit working with President Hovde at Purdue, and a plan was created that joined these two great universities in Indianapolis, and it worked. Now, the first issue to resolve was who was going to manage this university, because you really can't have two masters. So there were two campuses that were joint campuses, Indianapolis and Fort Wayne, and the two universities agreed that Purdue would manage the Fort Wayne campus and Indiana would manage the Indianapolis campus. There was very little in the way of undergraduate enrollment in Indianapolis in those days, but we knew it was coming, and indeed it did. Today, Dick, we have almost 30,000 students at IUPUI. That's an astounding number, really, and they want all the things that students at in Bloomington or West Lafayette want, meaning housing, meaning student life after classes end or on the weekends, and they want the full student experience. And so we had to think about how to support that, and we hired a new master planner back in the early 1970s, a man named Edward Larrabee Barnes out of New York, and Barnes was our partner in thinking through what Indianapolis ought to be, and there were some very obvious key obstacles to making that a first-rate campus. First of all, you had these two main thoroughfares running through the campus, Michigan Street, which runs to the west, and New York Street, which runs to the east, both one way, but both carry a lot of traffic and made getting across those streets difficult. Barnes came up with this idea of connecting all of the buildings and all of the buildings that were to be built by a second-level pedestrian walkway, sometimes known as the gerbil tubes, but they work, and they do get students around and over the main heavy streets that were there and are still there to this day. There is very little architectural style in Indianapolis. You could find almost every building material ever used by man somewhere at IUPUI, including red brick, orange brick, yellow brick, limestone. There was stucco on frame. It was everything, and so we needed to create something that was uniform. I mean, the great secret, and it's not a secret, but the great unifying factor in Bloomington, of course, is the use of limestone and natural landscape treatment. There was none of that in Indianapolis, and Barnes came up with a style that included both brick and limestone that could be used on buildings to sort of begin to tie it together. And that's what we did, and that's what we're still doing today. And in places where there were materials or out of palette, we tried to hide those places and or cover them or reclad them, and it's worked. Indianapolis is very different than Bloomington. Bloomington is a very natural feel. Indianapolis is a very disciplined feel. In Bloomington, we tend to avoid right angles and straight lines, but in Indianapolis, we design with right angles and straight lines and trees in rows, and because it's an urban campus, and an urban campus like IUPUI is a more disciplined approach because you have to make good use of the available land. The peninsula, IUPUI is essentially a peninsula of about 250 acres. It's not getting any larger, and so you have to use everything well and efficiently. And I think that's what's happened. It's been a wonderful challenge. I've been going up to IUPUI at least 3 days a week for 35 years. There was a period of time from 1982 to about 1995 when I went every day, never tired of the drive. It's a beautiful drive between here and there. 37 is as much fun to drive today as it was then, and it's 50 miles, 1 hour, it's been a lot of fun, and I think it has become a great university, and of course the medical school is just grown by leaps and bounds, but you know there's the law school there is terrific, and of course it's the only school of dentistry in the state, but there are other programs there, but the undergraduate offerings are very strong at IUPUI. We now have housing there, and so it has become a campus where students not only from Marion County and the surrounding counties where draw students, but students come from all over the state now to attend classes at IUPUI. It's one of America's remarkable educational stories, I think.
We're talking with Terry Kleypax, Vice President, Chief Administrative Officer, recently retired June 30th, 2009, after a sterling career, almost 50 years of association with the university, undergraduate, graduate, and administrator. You've had responsibility for all the campuses of the university, Terry, and we only have just a couple of minutes. We have to move on to some other topics. But were there any particular challenges on the other campuses? I know.
Well, I've been blessed to be involved with the creation of two campuses, IU Southeast and IU East, IU East being in Richmond and Southeast in New Albany. IU Southeast was particularly interesting because the chancellor who was there when the campus was created insisted that campus should be done, since it was IU's most southern campus, that it should be done in brick and then painted white. So he wanted white brick buildings. Now, can you imagine Indiana University doing buildings in white brick? It wasn't going to happen, but we had to gently persuade him that there was another way to plan a campus. And indeed, the campus is a brick campus, all brick, but it's a beautiful what's called courthouse blend. And it's a mixture of orange and red brick with a few black bricks thrown in there for texture and contrast. And all of the buildings there have copper roofs or a copper element in the roofing system. And it sits down below Floyd's Knobs, and it's turned out to be one of the most beautiful small campuses anywhere. But it's not limestone, and neither is the IU East campus, which is sort of a brown brick. But in both cases, they both resemble Bloomington in that there's lots of green space included, a lot of green areas, a lot of tree planting, and very natural setting. And so the challenge has been to work with chancellors at different campuses who sometimes have a very individual view of what those campuses ought to look like.
I want to talk to you about your momentous year and what, year and a half as athletic director? 2 years. Thank you for correcting me. But we do want to hear Johnny Mathis and his recording of Misty, because that's one of your favorite recordings, and thanks for bringing it in today.
Look at me, I'm as helpless as a kitten up a tree, and I feel like I'm clinging to a cloud I can't understand. I get misty just holding your hand. Walk my way, and a thousand violins begin to play. Or it might be the sound of your hello.
We're talking with J. Terry Claypax, who recently retired as Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer of Indiana University. Terry, one of your responsibilities over your vast career here, varied career, was being athletic director for 2 years. How did that come about, and what were your challenges in that role? Just speaking with some of the coaches that served under you, they couldn't have been more generous with their praise of you stepping in to a situation that wasn't that particularly ideal.
Well, it was an interesting time in my life. The athletic department had reported through my office for about 10 years during the administration of Tom Ehrlich and then Miles Brand. And we made a sudden change in the leadership out at athletics. And so then President Miles Brand said to me, called me down to the office, and he said, well, with this change that we've just made in leadership, we need someone to step in, and it'll just be 30 days or so. And since you've managed athletics on a certain level for the last decade and you know a little bit about it, you need to go out there. And I said, Miles, you mean go out there and just do that job? He says, oh, no. He said, you'll need to continue to be vice president and that. But you can do anything for 30 days. And so, as you know, Miles Brand left to become president of the NCAA. And I was actually there for 2 years and did both jobs for 2 years. I must say I really liked it. It wasn't very smart to try to do both jobs, and I couldn't have done it forever. And so, but Miles was right. You could do it for 30 days, and in fact, you could do it for longer than 30 days. And but the athletic department was in such disarray at that time that my main objective was to go out and deal with the severe morale issues that existed within the coaching staff and the ranks of those who worked in the athletic department. It was at an all-time low. We could see that the budget was becoming a problem, and frankly, IU athletics had a structural deficit, so to speak, in in revenue, mainly because attendance in football had been declining, and frankly, there's not a school in the Big Ten that can make it budget-wise or on the playing field without football being solid, and our football program needed to be solid, and that's where I thought I should spend most of my time out there. Basketball was also an area where we needed to spend time. We had just finished the Coach Knight transition, and Coach Davis was there. That was healing a bit. And frankly, going to the Final Four and playing for the national championship in 2002 in Atlanta against Maryland was one of the great healing moments in IU athletics, I believe, at least. And people were feeling a lot better about basketball. The other sports, what are sometimes referred to as the Olympic sports, had sort of been set aside for a while. And at Indiana, we've had a strong tradition in doing well in such sports as men's soccer and track and field and, of course, swimming and diving. The great Councilman Billingsley years, something we're very proud of at Indiana. We've won 24 national championships, I believe, in team sports at Indiana, and we've done it in I think, six different sports. And so we're very proud of the diversity of our athletic program. All of that needed some healing, and we had somehow turned away some of our most generous donors, and we needed to bring them back into the family. And we needed to create a winning atmosphere both on the field and in the classroom and in the community, and that was the challenge. I thoroughly enjoyed my time at IU Athletics, and to spend your days with the likes of Coach Jerry Yeagley, who coached six national championship teams here, and then his successor Mike Freitag, who followed it up with another national championship, and to see these other great coaches, whether it's Jeff Huber in diving or Ray Luz in swimming or Lynn Loring in women's tennis, and I could go on and on, and I should probably stop, or I may not mention someone I should, but it's just it was a great time for me, and it's part of my IU experience that I'll always treasure.
We'll be back with some remaining moments with Terry Klaypaks, but let's hear the last of his four selections, and certainly not the least. It's Hoagy Carmichael's wonderful tune. Then Earnest of You, Frank Sinatra, and Nelson Riddle.
It's not the pale moon that excites me, that thrills and delights me. Oh, no. It's just the nearness of you . It isn't your sweet conversation that brings this sensation.
Frank Sinatra, Nelson Riddle, and Hoagy's The Nearness of You. Terry, what do you do? You put in 12, 16-hour days. We all know that. What interests do you have outside of Brian Hall?
Well, I have a wonderful family, and Phyllis has been a wonderful partner for 48 years now. And there are several things we enjoy doing together. We both love gardening, and so we are out in the yard a lot together. And Phyllis is a master gardener, and And this past year was chair of the Bloomington Garden Walk, and so that's something we both enjoy. And we travel to nurseries, and we find where there are local arboretums when we travel, and we go visit, and we always have our eye open for a different sort of plant to use at our home, and so we both like that a lot. I've never lost my love of history. I love the Lewis and Clark story. I read Stephen Ambrose's book Undaunted Courage several years ago, and decided that I wanted to follow the Lewis and Clark trail. And so every summer we pick out a piece of it, and we go. Not that I hike it, but at least not all of it. I've hiked some of it, but. But Phyllis and I have traveled now almost all of the Lewis and Clark Trail, or as close as you can get to the trail as possible. And I think it's just a tremendous story and such a courageous moment in American history to launch out with the core of discovery and not know where you're going and know that indeed there were dangers all along the way, or there would be danger all along the way. And to do it with optimism and great spirit, I love the Lewis and Clark tale and have read many, many books. And so in that then, of course, you go off on tangents and you find other related kind of topics. The whole Manifest Destiny era of American history, beginning in, you know, at the end of the Civil War, running into the 20th century and the whole westward movement and the justification for that. It's a sad tale. I mean, it's an embarrassing tale, the way Native Americans were treated, countless times when treaties were broken, the whole tale of Custer and the battle at Little Bighorn and all that led up to that battle. I find all of that so interesting, and so I read a lot. And, of course, as you know, I play golf with this guy named Kurt Simic. That daily battle of supremacy, which I lose most of the time, goes on and will go on. And I hope my last breath on earth is taking $2 from him, putting it in my pocket and walking
this
over to my
This is costing me
car.
A lot, but my money's on you. Terry, and just we only have like 2 minutes left. And with a 50-year perspective on this canvas, take 2 minutes and tell the audience a couple of really favorite places of yours on the Bloomington campus.
Well, of course, I like most people, I love the Arboretum. It was such a critical decision when the old football stadium was demolished. What should go there? And there was pressure to do parking and maybe building sites. But John Ryan gave us wonderful support, and continuing Herman's notion about islands of green and replicating the rectangular area of Dunn Woods on out into the campus, the Arboretum was so perfect, and I love to walk through the Arboretum. And so on the grandest scale, that's really one of my favorite places. And within that site, if you go up to the gazebo up at the east end and you stand and you look down toward the pond, and to the west, it's one of the most beautiful places anywhere. I love to do that. In fact, our family recently had a family portrait taken there with that as the background. But there are lots of fun places just to be on the campus. I love to go over to the chemistry building, and on the south side of the chemistry building is coming out of the auditorium, where there's a little enclosed area looking out into that natural amphitheater that's there, and thinking that that's where Teddy Roosevelt delivered the commencement address to the class of 1918, and thinking in your mind what it must have looked like then and what it looks like now, it's just terrific. Maxwell Hall is just such a unique building, and I never look at Maxwell Hall, and I look at it almost every day, without seeing something new or different about the building that I never noticed before. It is such a unique architectural style, and it's unlike any other building on this campus, and I like it a lot. Of course, walking through the Crescent, walking over where Herman is sitting on the bench, extending his hand, all of that says to me Indiana University at its very finest.
And, I think you say Indiana University to us and all its very finest, Terry. Thank you. We've been talking with Vice President J. Terry Claypax, recently retired Vice President and Chief Administrative Officer of Indiana University. Dick Bishop, your host. Thank you again, Terry.
My pleasure, Dick.
The program you have just heard was recorded in June of 2009. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Production support for Profiles comes from Smithville, a locally owned business serving central and southern Indiana since 1922, with residential and business internet, voice, and security services. Smithville, local pride, global technology. Information at smithville.net. And the Funeral Chapel of Bloomington, providing funeral and crematory arrangement services for the chapel, church, and graveside. The Funeral Chapel, to honor and commemorate. 333-4400 or online at pdcfuneralchapel.com. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. Information about Profiles, including archives of past shows, can be found on our website, wfiu.org. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. Please join us again for the next edition of Profiles. For WFIU, thanks for listening.